Let's get started. So today and even next week, we'll cover in some depth wireless local area networks, wireless LANs. And as I said, we'll mix between some theory, how do they work, how do you send data from your laptop across the wireless network, and some practice of how can you configure a wireless network and how can we monitor and observe what happens in a wireless network. First, some terminology. There's three different names that we'll often hear or use. Wireless LANs, a wireless local area network, is the concept of creating a local area network using wireless technologies. Ethernet, the cables we plug into our PCs, is a local area network or creates a LAN. Wireless LAN, of course, we just don't use those cables. We're wireless. So wireless LANs is a general concept. One of the standards for creating a wireless LAN is IEEE 802.11. That's the name of a standard that describes a technology for providing a wireless LAN. So often you'll hear wireless LAN 802.11 or IEEE 802.11. And a third name you may hear is Wi-Fi, WIFI. That's a brand, like a brand name or a trademark, which some organization certifies that products that implement 802.11 comply to the standard. So there's an organization called the Wi-Fi Alliance that they look at every product and make sure it works properly according to wireless LANs. So wireless LANs, the concept, IEEE 802.11, the standard, which defines the technology for the communications. Wi-Fi is the trade name or the brand name that is often used to refer to such devices. So often you'll see them used interchangeably. That is, we may refer to this as a wireless LAN device, an 802.11 device, or a Wi-Fi device. This is a USB Wi-Fi device. That is, it plugs into the USB port of your computer and it implements a wireless LAN client. Similar to most laptops nowadays have a wireless LAN chip inbuilt on the motherboard. Or you can buy for your desktop a PCI card that plugs into the PCI slot on the computer to provide wireless LAN access, providing the same capabilities as each other, just different form factors. So let's explain what we mean by wireless LANs. So we're going to explain over this topic how they work. I said wireless LANs is the concept. One standard for wireless LANs is IEEE 802.11. In fact, it's the main, almost the only standard. There were some other ones in the past, but just not very common anymore. So the main, the dominant standard produced by the organization IEEE, standard number is 802.11. And there are different variations of that as well. We'll try to explain how it works and what impacts on the performance of a wireless LAN. Because as IT professionals, we'll often have to design a network, deploy a network, so we need to make decisions to make sure we design and deploy the best network for our needs. And that often comes down to making sure that we can provide adequate performance. We'll go through a number of things through this topic, which again will cover several lectures. First, some basic concepts of a wireless LAN. Quick introduction, what do we have? We talk about a wireless LAN client. That's your laptop. So most laptops have a wireless LAN device inbuilt, including an antenna. This is another wireless LAN client. That is, it can, if your laptop doesn't have wireless LAN, it's an old laptop, you can plug it into the USB port, and inside here, there's an antenna, a flat antenna, and a wireless LAN chip to implement 802.11. So there are different form factors, but they create a wireless LAN client. It doesn't have to be a mobile client. That is, this desktop computer can be a client as well. But we'll normally use the example of a laptop as a wireless LAN client. It communicates in the most common approach, communicates via wireless signals to a wireless LAN access point. And that's an example of one on the top of the desktop here. And you see them, you've seen access points around. They are simple computing devices which implement the wireless side of the communications, but normally also implement a wired link to the rest of the network. So if you just look outside the door, there's an access point that looks identical to this up on the wall. So your laptop can communicate via wireless communications to that access point or to this access point, and each of them would normally have a wired connection to the rest of the network in SIT. That is, the one up on the wall has a cable going from the back of it down through the wall cavities down into the switching center, the same place where this desktop has a cable going into the wall here and connects to the same location. So an access point connects the wireless network to the wired network in most cases. So the wireless communications is just over this first link from client to access point. From there onwards and out onto the internet is usually via a normal wired network. The 802.11 standard defines how do we send signals between here and here over the wireless part. It's not defining how do we communicate across the rest. Here we can use whatever technology we like. And the most common is an Ethernet network. That is, you plug a normal Ethernet cable into the access point, connect it to, say, a switch. Maybe in our case, in SIT, that switch is downstairs on the third floor in the small network center, and the cables go into that switch, which then connects onto a router, again a router inside this campus, which then has some link to the internet. In our case, it's the WiMAX link to the other campus, and I think we also have another backup link, say an ADSL link to an internet service provider. The standard for wireless LAN communications is defining how to communicate over this part, and that's what we will focus on. The rest, any technology in theory, the most common technology is Ethernet to connect here. Because the standard is talking about how to communicate across this wireless link, we can think of it as a layer 1 and layer 2 problem. That is, the layer 1 is the physical layer, how to send signals to represent bits, and the data link layer, layer 2, how to make sure that those bits get to the other side of the link in an efficient manner. So we're mainly concerned with the physical layer and the data link layer when we talk about wireless LANs. The next layer, the networking layer, is implemented using IP, the Internet Protocol. So we'll focus mainly on these for this topic. That is, how do we get bits from my laptop to this wireless LAN access point? All right, we have some antennas. There's an antenna built into my laptop. We can transmit and receive. How do we do that in an efficient manner such that we can have many users using the same network and get good performance? In theory, there are some different configurations that are shown here, but this is the most common one. So, again, some of the things we care about with network technologies is how fast can we send? So a quick overview of some of the characteristics of 802.11. Well, the most common standards, and in fact, slides are still a bit out of date. There were 11 megabits per second data rates. Perhaps the most common standard allows 54 megabits per second. And in fact, 802.11n allows more than 100 megabits per second data rate. So that's the speed at which you can send bits from your laptop, the maximum speed which you can send bits from your laptop to the access point, the client to the access point. That's the data rate or the capacity of that link. But the throughput, how much do we actually achieve when I'm transferring a file from my laptop via that access point? Maybe half that, because of different overheads, which we illustrate. And also it's shared. That is, if we have, when everyone this afternoon has their laptops open communicating to a single access point, that, let's say, 25 megabits per second, which is about half of 54. Why half? Well, we'll show that there are different overheads. Although I can send bits at 54 megabits per second, sometimes I'll have to send some headers, so that's an overhead. Sometimes I'll have to wait. I cannot send anything at all, so that's an overhead. As a result, these overheads add up, and in practice, you're talking about around 25 megabits per second. Exactly. But again, that's shared. If we have five of you turn on your laptop, communicate to the one access point, you must share that 25 amongst the five of those laptops. So that's down to 5 megabits per second each. So when you see 54 megabits per second capacity, that doesn't mean what you will achieve with your single laptop. We'll go through the performance and see how those numbers come up through this topic. How far? Tens of meters indoors, hundreds of meters outdoor. There are different limits, different technologies have different limits, but that's approximate what we're talking about. How much power do we transmit with? When I plug this into a laptop, how much power is it using to transmit a signal? Well, most devices range of between 1 milliwatt up to 100 milliwatts transmit power. Typical is around 20 or 30 milliwatts transmit power. So if you're transmitting at 30 milliwatts, then you can do some approximate calculations of how far you can transmit. If you know the transmit power, you know the capabilities of the receiver, that is how small a signal it can successfully receive, the receive power, then you can use some equations to work out how far we can transmit. The larger the transmit power, the further we can transmit, but the faster my battery is going to die on the laptop. Most common frequency used is 2.4 gigahertz. There are other frequency bands. This is the most common one. It's an unlicensed band. We've mentioned that before. You don't have to pay a license to use this. Anyone can use this frequency band. Good thing, it's easy to use, it's free. Bad thing, many people use that same frequency band and therefore can cause interference on each other. Although we're not going to focus much on security in this course, are they secure? Well, yes, satisfactory if they're set up correctly and use the right methods. That is, there are sufficient methods to provide reasonable security to transmit your signals from your laptop to here by encrypting the data so that no one else can see that data. So even though I'm transmitting from here to this access point, someone outside in the car park, some malicious user, may receive the signal that I transmit. That's bad. Therefore, we use encryption methods so that even though they can receive the signal, they cannot understand the data that I transmitted. That's what encryption does. And the standards provide adequate mechanisms for security. The most limitations come in configuring that and making sure it's used correctly. So that comes down to the human impact. So that's a quick overview of, okay, we want to send, how fast we can send, how far, and the other performance metrics we're interested in. So a few more terms and some basic concepts. So we have an access point. And I'll try to illustrate these are wired connections, cables. These are wireless connections. We have our clients. And we have may have multiple clients associate with an access point. So there's some term called association. That is, a client associates with an access point. Means the data that that client's going to send goes via this access point. Normally, the access points aren't the destinations. Normally, the destination, if I'm running my laptop here, I don't want to access data on the access point. I want to access data on some website out on the internet or on some computer inside SIT's network, say the SIT web server. So normally, the end-to-end communications is not from here to here, but it's from here, say, to another computer, either internal to our campus network or outside the on the internet. We go via the access point. So we may have multiple clients associate with an access point, which means their data will go via that individual access point. And a client, in the normal configuration, can only associate with one access point at a time. In this room, my laptop can probably receive signals from this access point, from the one out in the corridor out there, and from several others nearby as well. Potentially, I could associate with multiple access points, but using the standard, we can only connect to one at a time. I have to choose one of them. It will normally make sense to choose the best one in terms of signal strength. Choose the one that's closest. Of course, to cover a large area, one access point is not enough. Because of the limitation in the transmission distance, if we have one access point for this entire building, we'll only be able to cover the people within three or four rooms. We'll not be able to cover the people downstairs, especially on the first floor. So what we do in deploying a wireless network is have multiple access points across some area. And that's illustrated. Okay, we have two access points here. Some more terminology. A set of clients and the associated access point are called a basic service set, BSS. That's some terminology from the standard. And we'll see that when we configure a wireless network. Or, in a general term, a cell. Similar to a mobile phone network. We have a cell phone tower. A base station. Everyone who connects to that one tower via their mobile phone are considered in a cell, a cellular network. So sometimes we refer to this as a cell, or the technical term, a basic service set. Here's one BSS, here's another BSS. And the rest, and these two access points are connected via some wired Ethernet network in this example. And that's the most common connection. This is a switch. So they have cables into this switch. So if I want to send data from this client to this client, then it would go via this access point using the wireless LAN standard. And then the data via these cables, via the switch to this access point using Ethernet, for example. And then to this as the destination. So we may have a set of access points. Together, those set of access points and the clients are referred to as an extended service set. So that's the entire network. So in SIT, for example, there are maybe 20 or 30 different access points all together, and all of the clients that associate with them are part of an extended service set. The entire wireless network. And a client can move between one basic service set and another within the extended service set. And this process of changing from one BSS to another is called a handover. If I walk with my laptop, I associate with this access point, although this one's not actually part of SIT's network, it's one I bring myself, but if it was part of SIT's SIIT's network, I associate with this one because it's the closest one. Then I walk outside and the distance between my laptop and this one becomes too far. The signal's too weak. Therefore, my laptop tries to find another access point to associate with, say the one out there in the corridor. So that process of changing from one to the other is a handover. It takes some time and requires some special processes. As I walk downstairs, I may associate with a third access point and so on. So we have our extended service set. Any more? So this shows, and we've seen it before, the overall architecture for IEEE 802 standards for local and metropolitan area networks. This is wireless LAN here. So of our normal five-layer internet stack, 802 standards focus on the data link and physical layer, how to send bits, data efficiently across a link. We have Ethernet, 802.3, the old token ring, 802.5, wireless LAN, 802.11. There's a standard, in fact there are multiple standards for 802.11 physical layer. You've heard of 802.11b, 802.11g, 802.11n. We'll see that they are different physical layer standards for wireless LAN. And there's also a standard for medium access control, MAC, the MAC protocol. We'll spend some time explaining how that MAC protocol works. And other technologies are similar, WiMAX and Bluetooth and Zigbee and all those. And above that, there's some common standard for setting up links and assigning addresses to nodes, 802.2. Above that, at the network layer, we use normally IP, the Internet Protocol. And above that, TCP and so on, which are not part of the standard here. So we're going to look at those two layers, the physical layer and the MAC layer. Quickly, the physical layer, just the characteristics, not really how it works, but the characteristics, and then some more depth of the MAC layer. So the 802.11 standards comprise, in fact, multiple different variations or multiple different standards using letters at the end, 802.11 A, B, C, D, and so on. And they have different purposes. This is one view of what we can see, that we have a common 802.11 MAC layer. Remember, a medium access control is some mechanism such that the multiple clients and the access point can effectively share the medium. Medium access control. Control who can access the medium at what time and for how long. That is, this laptop can transmit, so we need some rules such that this laptop transmits to the access point, and then the next person laptop transmits to the access point, and so on. That's what the MAC is about. Underneath that is how to, once a laptop is allowed to transmit, how do we transmit those bits across the wireless link? And that's what the physical layer is about. And there have been improvements over time. 802.11, the original, was updated to 11A and 11B, 11G, and currently 11N is a standard. And there are improvements already being developed upon that. And the main thing we care about, the differences, is the speed. There are some others, but the speed is increased, the data rate. And there are some other enhancements for things like making the security better, for making dynamic access to the spectrum, to the frequencies available, providing quality of service, making sure that I can transmit video and voice over the wireless LAN such that we get good performance. We won't talk too much about those other enhancements. So let's look at the physical layer. And we'll try and keep it simple without explaining how it works, explain just the characteristics of that so that we can know how to design and deploy a network. Remember, it defines how do we send zeros and ones as some physical signal. In our case, we're using wireless, some radio waves, send some radio signals from a laptop to the access point. How do we make those signals represent bits? The 802.11 physical layer defines different things. The shape of those signals, the modulation schemes, the frequencies to use, so there are different frequencies, and the bandwidth of the signal, and some timing, how to synchronize, how does the receiver know that this is the start of the signal or end of it, or the start of the signal that represents bit one or the end of that bit one. So there are a number of aspects that the physical layer tries to define. What we're interested in, and we've mentioned this before, data rate, how fast can we send? How far can we send? The transmission range, which is we'll define as the maximum distance between two nodes such that they can communicate. And of course, that's going to depend upon transmit power. The larger transmit power, the larger the range. And receiver sensitivity, or in other words, the minimum receive power that a receiver can receive such that they can still understand the signal. And usually that's a characteristic of a product. This product, you can usually find the specifications, and one thing it will tell you what is the transmit power and what is the receiver sensitivity, or the minimum receive power threshold. That's built in, or that's a characteristic of a particular wireless LAN product. We care about the frequencies used, and related to that, because we'll see that we have different channels or different sets of frequencies that are allowed to be used. I could use one set of frequencies, someone else can use another set of frequencies, and those are referred to as channels. Then we care about how many different channels we have available to use. We'll say why shortly. So here's a summary of the different physical layer standards that have evolved over time. Take note that the last column, again, needs some updating. I created these numbers when it was a draft standard, when it was being developed. Since then, it's changed slightly. In fact, the data rate will not go up to this in most cases. But it's close. So this was the original standard, released in 1997. And it used the 2.4 gigahertz, the unlicensed, what's called ISM band, free for anyone to use. Use some modulation technique called DSSS. We're not going to talk about what that is. You can look up. I kind of dynamic something spread spectrum. It allowed three non-overlapping channels. And this will be important in a moment. I'll show a diagram that illustrates that. But let's focus on the others first. Data rate of 2 megabits per second. That's the maximum speed we could send. A range indoors of approximately, it differs on the transmit and receive powers, and of course where you are. Different obstacles will obstruct the signal. But approximately 20 meters indoors to up to around 300 meters outdoors. It was soon recognized when the people who developed this standard that these speeds were not going to be enough, that they could go faster and people would require faster speeds. So not long after, 2 years after, they released an updated standard, 11A, 11A and 11B, at the same time. Two updated standards. 11B first, same frequency, which is good because the products that use this technology could interoperate with the products using 11B. They're using the same frequency, they can hear each other's signals. That's good for upgrading networks. So use similar technologies but offered higher speed, 11 megabits per second maximum speed, about the same range. But there was an alternative developed, 11A, same time, used a different frequency, which meant you needed to buy a different set of products. That is, let's say my laptop implemented the original 802.11, not 11A, not 11B, but the original one on the left. So, and originally I had an 802.11 access point. They could communicate. If I upgraded the access point to 11B, my laptop, using the older standard, could still communicate because they're using the same transmission technology, same frequency, same modulation techniques. So my old laptop using this could communicate with my new access point using this technology. That's a nice thing for companies that need to upgrade. But my old laptop using this could not communicate with a new access point using this technology. They do not interoperate. And that's a bad thing for making upgrades easy. Does frequency affect the data rate? Yes. Yes, it does. That is, there is a relationship between the data rate and the frequency. Yep. But just by, you don't have to change the frequency to get a higher data rate. You can use improved technologies for encoding the bits as signals. And that's what the improvements have been made between here and here. A better way to take the bits and transmit as signals. So we can send more bits with one signal at a time as a result. And therefore, we can send our bits faster. So at the same time these two were released, this one was slower, this one about five times faster, but this one, 11B, was the most popular because it used existing technologies. And in fact, at that time, it was easier to implement products using this, cheaper to implement, and therefore cheaper for people to buy products. This was more expensive. So this one has not been used so much. Another problem with 11A is that even though we had five times the speed, our distance was reduced. We'd need more access points to cover the same area compared to using 11B. Okay, and then people developed, or the standards organization developed 11G, which was really an upgrade of 11B. Same frequency, bring us up to the same speed as 11A, 54 megabits per second. And the later standard, 11N. In fact, 11N can use the 2.4 gigahertz frequency. So this, it's not just 5 here, it should be 5, 2.4. And as I said, this the actual standard is, in fact, less than 300 megabits per second. I think 150 megabits per second is what's defined. But there are different ways of combining the signals to get together to get higher data rates. So over time, we've evolved to get faster speeds, faster data rates. Transmission range has not increased, and in fact has decreased over time. But indoors is about the same. So it hasn't impacted so much on organisations in using wireless LANs as a company LAN. The outdoor ranges are not so large. And the main frequencies used are either the 2.4 gigahertz and the 5 gigahertz, which is also an unlicensed band in most countries. What about the channels? Why do we care about channels? Let's look at an example that illustrates the channels. You may not be able to see it too well. This is looking at the set of frequencies that are available for in the 2.4 gigahertz band. when I say 2.4 gigahertz, it doesn't mean we send at exactly, we send our signal at exactly 2.4 gigahertz. We in fact use a bandwidth. We use a range of signals to transmit our data. And the bandwidth that we require by the standard is 22 megahertz. So when I transmit my signals from laptop to the access point, I'm using a bandwidth of 22 megahertz, a range of frequencies covering that bandwidth. And that signal is centered on some frequency. So here, if this is a bandwidth, so frequency is increasing along this line. This is one channel centered on the frequency 2.437 gigahertz. That's one of the channels available to us. And when I transmit on this channel, channel number 6, centered on 2.437 gigahertz, I'm actually using frequencies from, 2.437 minus 11 megahertz, which is 2.426. 2.426 gigahertz through to 2.448 gigahertz. The difference between these two is 22 megahertz. That's our bandwidth. So on channel 6, if you're transmitting using channel 6, you're actually transmitting using this range of frequencies, centered along or centered upon 2.437 gigahertz. So when we talk about a frequency, we in fact are not correct. We talk about, we transmit with a range of frequencies. And within the 802.11, 11B, the 2.4 gigahertz band, there are in fact a range of frequencies of about 80 megahertz. Here's 2.412, here's 2.484, so the difference of about 80 megahertz. And there are different channels defined. That's the channels 13 and the 14th channel defined here. In some countries, the available channels differ. In some countries, maybe only the first 11 channels are available, because the other frequencies are used by different technologies. So it may be different in Europe than it is in the US and than it is in Thailand. But approximately we have between 11 and 14 channels available to transmit on. Our client and our access point need to use the same channel if they want to communicate, and they choose one channel. What's important is that we do not interfere with people transmitting on other channels. If I transmit using channel 6, then we can think that I will interfere, I will transmit on this range of frequencies, I will interfere with anyone who is transmitting using an overlapping range of frequencies. So we can see if someone was using channel 7, we see they would be overlapping, a portion of the frequencies they use would overlap with a portion of the frequencies I use on channel 6. Because this is the coverage of channel 6, here's the coverage of channel 7. So if I was using channel 6, someone else using channel 7, and we both transmit, they would interfere with each other, and that's not good. Interference causes problems, because then we have to retransmit and our data rate decreases significantly. And therefore, we'd like to choose a channel that doesn't interfere with another channel. And we call those non-overlapping channels. And generally, we have 3 non-overlapping channels available. Of the 11 or even 14 in total, if we choose channel 1, I transmit on channel 1. The next person transmits on channel 6. They do not interfere. This is the coverage of channel 6. Here's channel 1. And the third person transmits on channel 11. Then those signals, even if we transmit at exactly the same time, will not interfere with each other. And that's a good thing. What that allows, here's my access point one. Here's my laptop. And let's say they're using to communicate channel one. The maximum, let's assume 802.11g, the maximum data rate we can send out across this link is 54 megabits per second. Of assuming no one else is transmitting, that's the maximum, well, that's the maximum data rate. The throughput, because of different overheads which we cannot avoid, may be about half of that. Let's say the throughput, the actual rate at which my useful data is delivered to the access point, let's make it 24 megabits per second. Approximately half of that. So that's the rate at which I can transmit my data. If I have a second laptop, laptop 2, uses channel 1 as well, connects or associates with the same access point, then in effect we must share this medium amongst the two laptops. We must share the data rate, we must share the throughput, approximately. Because we're using the same channel, only one is allowed to transmit at a time, because we want to avoid interference. Therefore, the MAC protocol is designed such that even though there are two laptops, only one will be allowed to transmit at a time. As a result, this one will get a throughput of about 12 megabits per second, and this one 12 megabits per second. So we can say the throughput of that basic server set using that access point, the total is 24, but we need to divide by the number of laptops. They get 12 each. An alternative. Let's introduce a second access point in the same area. I'll just draw it here so we have some space. A second access point. And instead of this laptop 2 connecting or associating with access point 1, it transmits to access point 2. Let's say I put two access points next to each other. Laptop 1 associates with access point 1. Laptop 2 associates with access point 2. What's the data rate that each laptop can achieve? And there's a condition here. Let's say they both use channel 1. What's the data rate that laptop 1 can achieve? Both using channel 1. Divided by half. The same as we had before. That is, here we're using channel 1. Here we're using channel 1. Even though we have two different access points, if this one transmits and this one transmits at the same time, even though they're sending to a different destination, if they're in the same area, they will interfere with each other. And the MAC protocol will operate such that if that potentially will happen, then it will only allow one to transmit at a time. Laptop 1 and then laptop 2. And then laptop 1 and then laptop 2. So, again, we must share this total throughput amongst the two laptops. They only get 12 each. So, here's where the different channels becomes useful. Change this to a non-overlapping channel, one where if they transmit at the same time, they will not interfere with each other, channel 6. Here we're transmitting on channel 1. Here we're transmitting on channel 6. They will not interfere with each other. And it's as if this laptop, even if they're in the same area next to each other, it's as if they don't know that the other one is there. And the MAC protocol will allow this one to transmit all of the time. and this one to transmit all of the time, because there's no chance of interference. As the result, they'll achieve their full 24 megabits per second throughput. This, we can think, this network gets 24 megabits per second used entirely by this laptop, and this separate network gets 24 megabits per second used by this laptop. So that's where using different non-overlapping channels brings a benefit. We've doubled the speed at which we can transmit data by introducing this extra channel. And of course, we could have a third non-overlapping channel, channel 11. So we could triple the speed as opposed to using a single channel. And that becomes important when you're designing a network where you have multiple access points. Some are placed near each other, therefore clients would interfere with each other if they transmit. Placing those, making sure those access points use different non-overlapping channels can be of benefit. Access point 1 uses channel 1 here. The access point out there uses channel 6. So that any laptop that associates with this access point will not interfere with laptops out there that associate with a second access point. That's the idea. So non-overlapping channels is useful because it can increase our overall data rate. So, and when we, and we'll do that this afternoon, when we configure an access point, we've got the options of manually, both the access point and client, manually selecting a channel or allowing it to be automatic. And in fact, some of the extensions of 802.11 try to be more intelligent. Choose a frequency, the laptop will do it for you. Choose a frequency that's not being used by anyone else. That's a better way to do it. If you detect that there are other laptops around using frequencies or channels 1 and 6, it would make sense to use channel 11 so you don't interfere. Returning to our overview of the physical layers. So this number of channels rows refers to the number of non-overlapping channels. We saw we had 3 in that previous diagram. The more we have, the better. In 11A, we have up to 8. That's good. 11N, now we have between 4 and 8. It depends on how we use those channels and how we use the technology. It also depends on what country you're in some cases. Different countries limit the spectrum you have available. The more non-overlapping channels, the better it is for the network design. So that's the summary characteristics of 802.11 physical layer. We're not going to explain how the different modulation schemes work, how we transmit our signals. We'll just keep it simple. Remember, we have what's called broadcast radio, or a point-to-multipoint topology. When a transmitter transmits, anyone within range, this is in 2 dimensions, but in practice in 3 dimensions, anyone within range will receive. It's a point, single-point transmitter, multiple points can receive that signal. Because the frequency bands are unlicensed, the ones that were used, then anyone can be using them without paying. As a result, there can be a lot of interference with many people using the same frequency, not just for wireless LAN, but also for some cordless phones or for some microwaves or some other technologies, even Zigbee or... Zigbee technologies allow 2.4 gigahertz. They will interfere with each other. So that's a problem, and we need to deal with that interference so that it doesn't occur. One way, use different channels. But again, there are only 3 channels available. With many users, we'll still have many using the same channel. And that's where the MAC protocol comes in. To make sure we're fair and efficient in sharing amongst the different users. So we'll make some assumptions about the transmission to keep things simple. Because in fact, when I transmit a signal, the distance that it's going to cover depends on many factors. It depends on how much power I transmit with, what obstructions are in the way, what other signals are around. We will say that the transmission range is the maximum distance at which two devices can transmit such that they can still communicate with each other. So I could say approximately the transmission range of this device is 30 meters. Anyone within 30 meters of this will receive the signal okay. 31 meters, they will not receive it. In practice, it's not that simple. Maybe as the conditions change, after 31 meters, you will receive the signal. But to keep things simple, we generally say there's some approximate limit of the distance at which we can transmit and call that the transmission range. Again, we're going to assume the transmissions go in all directions, omnidirectional. 30 meters transmission range, let's keep it simple and say 30 meters up, 30 meters across, 30 meters down. Of course, not true. Because of the obstructions of the floor and the ceiling, it's probably going to go 30 meters that way, maybe 5 meters that way. But to keep things simple, if I say a transmission range is 30 meters, we'll assume a perfect environment, unless we say otherwise. A radio device, this, can normally only transmit or receive at the same time. It's half duplex. I can transmit to an access point, or I can receive from that access point. I cannot transmit and receive at the same time. And that limits the performance of the system. Why is that the case? It's hard to make the transmitter and receiver, the transmitter, such that they can do both at the same time. Because if you transmit out of here and try to receive as well, your transmission will interfere with what you're receiving. And designing and building the hardware to do that, to separate the transmission and receiver, is hard and generally not done. Most devices transmit or receive. Therefore, we have half duplex. Most wired networks, especially Ethernet, are full duplex. I plug a cable from my laptop into a switch. I can send 100 megabits per second, and I can receive 100 megabits per second at the same time. With wireless LAN, I can transmit, let's say, 54 megabits per second, or receive. So there's a big difference in performance. With Ethernet, in effect, I get 200 megabits per second. With wireless LAN, only 54. So half duplex impacts on the performance. We will say or assume that two or more devices, or one device, cannot successfully receive transmissions from two or more sources at the same time. If this is my receiver, and there are two devices transmitting at the same time, then this one will not be able to make sense of either of those signals. Those two signals from the sources will interfere with each other, and from the perspective of the receiver, it will not make sense of either of them. That's interference. Again, in practice, it's not that simple. Sometimes it can be a little bit more intelligent. If this laptop is transmitting to here, because the signal may be very strong, if someone in another room is also transmitting to here, the signal from that other source may be very weak. And maybe this one can make sense of the stronger signal. But for simplicity in this course or in this topic, we'll assume if two transmit at the same time, then they will interfere at the receiver, and the receiver cannot understand either of them. As a result, the packets which were transmitted in those signals cannot be successfully received, or we say that there's a collision between those packets. Two people transmit to the same source at the same time, those packets collide with each other and neither of them are received. We need to deal with that somehow. This is a time to mark your attendance. So some assumptions that we're going to make to simplify when we look at the MAC protocol to understand what the MAC protocol does. We have a transmission range. We'll say it's some hard limit. If we're outside of the range, we cannot receive. Within the range, we can. We have half duplex operation, and two or more people transmit, or a receiver receives two or more transmissions, those transmissions are unsuccessful. That we have a collision. And we'll make those assumptions when we look at the MAC layer. So that's all we say about the physical layer. So we can transmit signals from here to the destination at some speed over some distance. If we use the same frequency as other transmitters, they will interfere with each other. And that's a bad thing. And one of the role of the MAC layer is to avoid that interference. And to do so, make sure that only one transmits at a time. But another role of the MAC layer is to set up the network. And that's all we'll focus on this morning. The management procedures. This afternoon and next week, we'll look at the data transmission. So the MAC layer does different things. Define some management procedures. I turn on my laptop. How do I know where the access point is? Which access point to associate with? So we need some procedures to locate or discover access points and join or associate with those access points. That's what we'll talk about. Other aspects, which we'll cover later, is okay, once I've joined or associated with an access point, how do I send my packets to that access point? And how do I do it in an efficient and robust manner? And we'll talk about that later. The MAC procedures that we're going to talk about are generally common. Doesn't matter if I'm using 11G, 11N, 11B, or the original 802.11. Same procedures are used. These just change some of the parameter values. The same general procedures. Remember, we use normal Ethernet 48-bit addresses. Pass that around and you'll see it. Turn over your laptop, you may see your MAC address. After the lunch break, we will have five or six access points and you'll see and configure the MAC address on them. But all devices are using 48-bit MAC addresses. We'll see some more examples later. Let's look at the management procedures. So, you turn on your laptop, starts up, the wireless hardware starts up. There are multiple access points around. How do I know that? And you know when you start your operating system, this operating system will tell you, it will list there are five networks available. WSIIT, Linksys, OpenWRT, different names of networks. How does your laptop know that? That's the first question. How do you discover access points? Two approaches. First approach, the access point periodically sends out messages. Every second, it may send out 100 or 10 different messages. These are called beacon messages, advertising itself. The access point sends out a message saying, I am an access point. So by default, this one's, and it's probably doing it now, sending out 10 messages per second called beacons saying, I am an access point. This is my address. and it's broadcast, that message. Anyone within range will receive this beacon. So when I turn on my laptop and it starts up, I should receive a beacon from this access point, and therefore I will... Now make sure when you sign your name, you sign only your name. I can count the people here, so I know if different names have joined. The access point sends out beacons. I start my laptop, receive a beacon, therefore I've discovered the access point. At the same time, I may receive a beacon from the access point outside. Therefore, I've discovered that access point as well. So that's a simple process. Send out beacon frames. And most access points do that. They don't have to, but they're configured by default to do that. The other approach, you're too impatient to wait for a beacon, or there are no beacons coming. You turn on your laptop, it's sitting there waiting, there's no beacons received, it can be active and send out what's called a probe request. Instead of waiting passively for beacons, be active and broadcast a probe request saying, is there an access point out there? So now my laptop broadcasts this special message. Any access point that is willing to allow my laptop to connect will respond to that probe request with a probe response. So this is a passive approach for discovery. This is an active approach. Once I discover an access point, I need to associate with that access point. Tell it that I want to use it to send my data via. And there are two steps. We need to do some authentication. The access point may want to check whether I'm allowed to associate with it, to authenticate. And if that passes, then I do the association procedure. I send it some information saying, okay, we're going to associate with each other, and from then on, when I send data, it will go to that access point. So that's some process of registering the client with the access point. Once it's associated, once my laptop is associated with an access point, we can exchange data. And later we'll look at exactly how we exchange data. I shut down my laptop. I shut down, the operating system's shutting down, turns off the wireless. Before it does that, what it may do is deassociate or disassociate or deauthenticate. Tell the access point, I no longer want to be associated with you and I'm no longer going to send data to you. So there's a process for doing that. This gives a simple illustration of those steps. So we have special frames within 802.11 wireless LANs, special types of packets. Access points periodically send out beacons. All right, here we've just shown one beacon. But in fact, over time, there'll be many beacons. And this is broadcast. Any client within range will receive that beacon. In this example, the client receives a beacon, decides, okay, I want to connect to that access point. So it initiates the joining procedure. I send an authentication request saying, I want to connect to you. Here are my authentication details. It may be configured to supply some shared secret, some shared key. So if your laptop has the secret, it sends it to the access point. The access point should have that same secret value. If they match, then the access point says, yes, you're allowed to use me, you're allowed to authenticate. If they don't match, it says no, and either it sends back an error message or doesn't send anything at all. So that's a simple way to do authentication. Send a request. If everything's okay, the access point sends back a response. Once that's successful, we associate with the access point. Again, a request, if everything's okay. This is not about authentication, checking that it has resources to allow this client to connect, sends back a response. At this stage, we have joined or associated with the access point. We can send data back and forth. Once we want to disconnect, that is, we no longer want to send data to that access point, either the client or the access point can initiate this disconnection. And it can either say, I no longer want to associate, I want to disassociate, or I no longer want you to be authenticated. I can de-authenticate. Once you receive one of them, you can no longer send data via the access point. So the access point may send a special de-authentication message to my laptop saying, you're no longer authenticated to use me, after which I cannot send data to it until I perhaps authenticate again. Maybe the password on the access point changes. Previously, we were connected using one password. The password on the access point changes. That de-authenticates my laptop. Then my laptop would send a new authentication request with a new password to use it. And there are variations of this. Or we can have multiple beacons. We don't have to use a beacon. We can use a probe request and a probe response. Let's look at... Now, is there any more? That just lists the types of frames. So there are special frames called management frames. Beacons, probe request, probe response, authentication request response, associate request response. There's also a reassociate. You currently are associated with that one access point and you want to reassociate. And leaving, frames for leaving. Let's look at an example. And where are we? This example, you'll be able to see more details this afternoon when you have your own access point. I'll just show it on mine, if I can. This access point is connected to the PC. It's got no connection out to the internet. My laptop, I'm going to use the wireless LAN. And a special program that tries to capture all of the wireless packets being sent. And it's doing that now. So what we can see, so what's happening, and some of you have done this in the lab, you use things TCP dump and Wireshark to capture packets on the Ethernet LAN. This is using a program to capture packets on the wireless LAN. So my laptop is just listening and receiving packets. It's in fact receiving packets from multiple access points nearby, and it lists them up here. I'll just put them in order. So some we can recognize. There are four access points with the name WSIIT. There'd be one out in that corridor, and perhaps there are three others around, either downstairs or down the other end of the corridor. Linksys is this one here. That's the name of this one. We'll see that later. And OpenWRT, I think, is one down on the third floor even. No, maybe it's up on the fourth floor. So these are different access points. How does my laptop know? Because my laptop is receiving beacons from these access points. Those access points are periodically sending beacons, saying, I am an access point, here's my address. And the software here is just receiving them and reporting them on the screen. We see more later if we look at a specific access point. that the one here, we can see details like the signal strength from that access point. The signal to noise ratio, normally that, so that needs to be high. And normally it needs to be above about 10 or 14 dB for a wireless LAN. So the signal to noise ratio is quite good, it's varying. I think that's part, mostly due to the software, the way that it keeps track of it, or the measuring techniques, but it's high enough. We see it's strong signal. And the signal strength and the noise measured. So we can see different things about the signal being transmitted. And that's being measured from those beacons that are being received. So every 1 second, this access point is sending 10 beacons. When my laptop receives one of those beacons, it measures the signal strength for that received message and is reporting it here, or reporting some average here. We can look at details of that access point. You'll see more details when we use the web interface this afternoon, but we can see, oh, this is the WSIT access point. Has some BSS ID. This is the basic server set. Remember, every access point and the associated clients form a basic server set. And it has some ID, some unique ID. And the ID is, in fact, the MAC address of the access point. So if you go and find this access point somewhere, probably you look on the back and it will have this MAC address on there. The technology it's using, this one, this access point supports 11B as well as 11G. So clients using either of these two technologies could associate with this access point. It doesn't support 11A or 11N. Maximum data rate, 54 megabits per second. Maximum seen, that is, it's seen packets that use this maximum data rate. It's an access point, something about beacons. Oh, the channel. It's using channel 10 in that case. And there are some other statistics or other information about that particular access point. And, of course, we can see that about other access points. The one here links this, similar, but using configured at least to use channel 11. And other things about the security used, whether there's any privacy. In this case, it's configured node. The number of link layer packets received is counted here. So we can start to see some of these things, and by monitoring, we'll see how the wireless LAN works by monitoring the packets that are being sent. I think that will do for this morning. We'll stop there. And what we'll do in the next lecture this afternoon is that I've got five or six other access points. I've got two power boards, and you've got your laptops. We will plug them in. And a group of three or four will sit around an access point and use, or at least look at the configuration, the web-based configuration, just go through some of the steps, see how it works, and then we'll monitor some of the traffic. I will show that up here from the multiple access points, and then we'll start transferring data and see how that works. So let's continue in the afternoon. Make sure you have your laptop. I'll have the power boards and access points here at the start of the lecture.